This week's Cloudcast is brought to you by Momentum SI. Whether you want to migrate applications to the cloud, transform to enable DevOps, gain insight from big data, or accelerate your agile development, Momentum SI's strategy, consulting, and hands-on expertise can help you get there faster and with greater success. Check them out at MomentumSI.com. And now, on to the show.
Cloudcast Media presents, from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina, this is the Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to the final show of the Cloudcast here in 2014, coming to you live from our massive studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Aaron, good to have you on the show, man. I think we've had about two or three out of the last four that we've been together, so how are you?
Yeah, good. We actually might have a streak going here for some reason, right? Yeah. So yeah, it is December 31st, and I'm in the remote studio, otherwise known as the spare bedroom downstairs, away from everyone else because no one's woken up yet. And we've kind of always wanted to do some, you know, we've done predictions in the past and we're like, oh shit, it's the last day of the year. We need to do some predictions.
Yeah.
but I guess before we get into that, let's talk about kind of 2014 in review real quick.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of things. We don't talk a lot about the show publicly a whole lot, not because we're hiding stuff, just because we're kind of lazy about keeping track of it. But we did some keeping track here over the holidays. So I think last year we did like 51 shows, I believe. This year we only did 48, so we're behind a little bit on shows, part of it because of travel and part of it because of travel. And
yeah, and part of it was, you know, I don't know that we've ever said it publicly, but we kind of have gone away from doing live shows at shows.
Yeah.
Conferences. You know, we've gotten some feedback that the audio quality was a little shitty and
right. Yeah, we used to bang out like 10 shows at like OpenStack Summit, so
right. And you know, just so everyone kind of knows going forward, we tend to use those events. We certainly want to see everyone, we certainly want to talk to everyone, and we use them to kind of line up shows, but just solely from user feedback, that, you know, the listeners just didn't really like the audio quality, so we were like, you know what, fine.
So I think, you know, the goal is still we're going to do a show a week. You know, we came pretty close, 48 out of 52. So two stats that I thought were really interesting. The first one was listens for the show grew 40% year over year, and we're now at the end of year four. So that to me is a huge, huge thank you to our audience.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody.
You know, we switched the show about April or May. We kind of went away from kind of cloud computing specific to kind of more developer, SaaS, public cloud, and you guys stuck with us. And so for that, thank you so much. You guys are awesome. We always say you're sort of the best community, the best audience in technology. So those numbers definitely show it. The other thing we thought was really cool, and I'm not sure why we started recording this, but we sort of made a big spreadsheet of it. Our guests this year topped over $2 billion. $2 billion in VC funding that they received. So, you know, for us, that's very, very cool. It means we get to hang out with some very, very smart people, some very, hopefully, very successful people. But yeah, our guests have gotten over $2 billion in VC funding. And that's, we only counted that as money they received since coming on the show. So it's not us going out and sort of cherry picking, you know, the super hot ones. We kind of feel like we've got a very cool relationship with the community, with Silicon Valley, that we're able to kind of find some companies that are, we think, are up and coming, and hopefully that you guys like that stuff. So we thought those were two kind of cool stats from the year. And with that, so the one thing we haven't talked a whole lot about, but it's coming up.
No, we've been slack, man, and we're behind.
It does involve numbers. is the Krispy Kreme challenge. So, where are you at in Krispy Kreme world?
Yeah. So, from a personal and running standpoint, I'm fine because I have to train for a half marathon. So, yeah, I feel like I can get through it. From a fundraising standpoint, we're really behind. So first of all, Brian, how you doing on running? And then I guess we got to talk about you know, fundraising, right?
Yeah. So, so as far as running goes, I'm woefully behind. you know, unfortunately, life happens sometimes, and I haven't been able to run as much as I'd like to. So behind on Krispy Kreme. So the good news about that is, for those of you that tune in for the Krispy Kreme video, or you make your donations to see if one of us will puke, there is a good chance that at least 50% of us will potentially puke at this year's event.
Yep. And if you want to come out and run with us,
yeah,
don't feel like you have to be in shape.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but the other side of it is, you know, you guys have been really awesome in the past. You know, we've raised, I think, close to $12,000 for the Krispy Kreme Challenge, which, you know, everybody thinks of it as the donut run, but it's, you know, it's ultimately, it's this very cool, big fundraising thing, charity thing for the NC Children's Hospital. So a lot of sick kids, and not just, you know, coughs and colds, sick kids like cancer, terminally ill kind of kids, can go to NC Children's Hospital, and the doctors there are amazing. They're really great for their families. And so all the money goes to them. So that's really why we do it. It's cool for us to give back to the community. So, we're going to start talking about it a little bit more. We love that the community becomes part of it with us and makes donations. We make a donation, we run. Yeah, we are, we're woefully behind in our fundraising. And we need to, pick that up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're out there and you're interested and you feel kind of motivated to throw the North Carolina Children's Home a little bit of money, go to thecloudcast.net, the webpage, upper right-hand corner, there is a button for Krispy Kreme Challenge. Just click on that. It'll take you over to the fundraising page, and then you can donate through there. It's both PayPal and all the major credit cards as well.
Yeah. So with that, We thought we would do a quick kind of run through of last year's predictions to see how you know, incredibly genius we are or incredibly stupid we are.
One of the and two. I didn't. You went ahead and like listened to the show to see how we did, and I didn't. So this is going to be like, you know, pop quiz kind of for me. And we'll see how embarrassing we were, right?
Yeah. So you know, so if you're new to the show, which we're finding, if you were to go back to episode 126, you'll kind of hear our, you know, 2013 in review, 2014 picks. Let me kind of run through what we did for predictions, because the last show was a lot of us, you know, what did we think of the year kind of stuff. So one of the first ones was, will 2014 be a make or break year for OpenStack?
I don't know. So my gut prediction is I don't know. I think we had the long, like you and I both predicted, a long coming consolidation of the industry. I think most of the OpenStack startups went away this year, or got, I shouldn't say went away, we, you know, got eaten up by some of the larger vendors. I don't know that it was necessarily, I wouldn't call it make or break yet, but I would certainly say it's very close to it. I'd almost push that one to 2015 now.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the big news for OpenStack, I think, was a lot of the big names, the original names, are now not necessarily gone, but not independents anymore. So whether it's, you know, Josh leaving Piston Cloud and moving on to Paz, or Randy getting acquired, or, you know, lots of rumors about what's going on with Chris Kemp's company, or, you know, some people moving over to HP. Yeah, definitely with some consolidation, Cisco buying MetaCloud, you know, some of the big companies are buying the smaller companies. So yeah, I think push is fair on that one. We'll see what happens with OpenStack. Although there was still some funding and stuff like that. So people like,
yep,
Blue Box got funded, but the folks who got funded, whether it was like Mirantis or Blue Box, are the people who are actually doing deployments and doing big stuff. So, you know, that's the other side of it, is, you know, it's sort of shit or get off the pot with OpenStack. And
yep,
the ones who
fair
are, you know, being active are being rewarded.
Absolutely. Agreed.
All right. So the second one, and this was sort of, you know, just kind of buzzwordsy kind of measuring, was, you know, where do we think software defined will be? And I think what we sort of came away with, you know, we felt like some areas, you know, software-defined networking we felt like was all over the map. Software-defined storage we thought was going to get kind of convoluted, and people were just going to call hardware software and say their every offering they did was software-defined. I think we're pretty close on this one as well, although I don't,
yep,
know that this one was super hard to pick, because
I know
there was so much buzz about software-defined.
It's true. And we made it vague enough we could count it as a win, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think software-defined on the storage side is still it's a little strange because you're always dealing with hardware with storage, right? There's no way two ways around it. I think the one that confused the crap out of me was the network one. Like, I can't figure out for the life of me what's going on with Open Daylight. You know, we've got people that were involved with Open Daylight, like our buddies at Socketplane, like, you know, John Willis and others, you know, are off doing startups now and getting out of Open Daylight. And I can't for the life of me figure out what's going on with that group, because they're a standard, then they're not a standard, then Cisco's in, then Cisco's out, then, you know, like, I don't know what's going on with software-defined sort of standard side of stuff. I know what's going on with Nicira or with, you know, VMware and Cisco and right. so forth.
Well, and I would actually add this. It almost feels to me like just kind of where the industry's going and buzz and stuff. It almost feels like the, you know, and I'm using air quotes here, the software-defined storage stuff seems to have more use cases and seems to be gaining more traction faster. It almost seems like the software-defined networking stuff was still like, hey, this is awesome, this is great. And then everyone looks at it and goes, yep, that's awesome, that's great. And then everyone goes, okay, it's time to deploy. And they go, I just don't feel like software-defined networking, I almost feel like we're almost at the exact same point we were a year ago.
Yeah.
Like I do not feel like SDN has moved forward substantially in the industry.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think the other part of that is I think software defined, I mean, storage arrays, for example, are basically just, you know, software on a bunch of servers. They just happen to get all packaged up. You know, networking is a completely kind of different beast in terms of, you know, what's actually commoditized and what's real, and, you know, and so I think the amount of sort of, you know, kind of digging your boots in and going, I don't want to change because that's not what it looks like to me, I think is much, the force is much stronger on the SDN side of there, the anti-SDN side of things in terms of people wanting to change and stuff. So, all right, cool. The third one, and this one's a little bit more near and dear to your heart because of what you've done in the past and what you're doing today. So you made a statement that, you know, we're getting to a point where stuff is really complicated. You know, so many new things coming out and things are complicated to keep up with. And we're seeing this sort of trend towards converged systems. And we're seeing this trend toward people going like, good enough is good enough if it'll help me go faster, right?
Yep.
And your comment was really like, the new metric is whether something's on-prem or off-prem is like, does it make the business go faster? And so it was, you know, will converged systems and simplified systems become the new sort of de facto?
Yep. And I think it did.
Yeah, I do too.
I think there was a lot of progress in this area this year.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, a lot of cool stuff going on. It's so, you know, we had the as some people like to say, the final nail in the coffin, which is sort of interesting. You know, VCE kind of ceased to be an independent company. It's, you know, it got kind of acquired by EMC, but still sort of partially held by Cisco, although, you know, nail in the coffin for a $2 billion industry, you know, company is kind of an odd way of looking at it, but okay.
Fair. Absolutely.
You know, you had what VMware's doing with this Evo thing, which I think will be an interesting discussion for 2015. I've got my thoughts on that. You know, your guys' company came out with a converged system. All the storage companies have converged systems now. Cisco's doing converged systems with IBM, which is interesting bedfellows. I mean, everybody's kind of realizing
Cisco's doing converged systems with everybody now.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think it's become. I think the real interesting thing will be, you know, the vendors obviously love it because it's a way to get together with the pieces of technology that they don't own necessarily, or a way to get into customers that they may not necessarily have, you know, direct buying to. I think it makes a lot of sense technology wise for end users, but it'll be interesting to see if, you know, beyond a couple of sort of winners, if it does become the de facto for how everybody buys everything regardless of which vendor you end up using.
Agreed. Sorry, I was drinking coffee on mute.
Now here's my one kind of thought, and this will be, I think this bleeds into where we're going next. I think this is my two cents. I think there's a market for the mashing stuff on top, you know, like the new cool stuff on these converged systems. So, like, I will be very interested to see if somebody builds a converged OpenStack or a converged something with platform as a service on it, or converged with a whole bunch of you know, Ansible, Puppet, whatever, that just help get it up and running and do some of the new stuff. And I don't know if that'll. I mean, I feel like that stuff is super complicated, and some of the hyperconverged or the converged stuff helps it. But maybe I'm mashing hardware converge with software converge too much.
Well, so I don't know. My initial take is, yeah, it sounds awesome, but I also think, too, I don't think it's going to be, like, universally done, because I think it's going to be one of those. If you mash all those things together, it almost works like, okay, here's the, like, 10 cases it works in, and here's the 100 cases it doesn't work in.
Right. Yeah, that's the one downside of the converged things is they tend to immediately go to, hey, we do VDI, and we do a couple of things, and it's like, oh, okay, you're an appliance now. You're not
right.
Really converged, so.
Yeah, it almost seems like use case appliances or use case infrastructure appliances seems to be the this whole idea of general use case converged infrastructure. I'm still not sold on it. I'm not.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard for people to wrap their head around how to design like that because they're so used to specific stuff.
Okay. Agreed.
So the last one we had around predictions, and this was kind of this one, I don't know how we were going to measure it per se, but you know, we said, hey, you've got traditional vendors, you've got the public cloud, you know, it wasn't so much which wins, but it was going to be, you know, will you see them flip-flopping to who plays by whose rules? Will the large vendors who have tons of money and lots of market share change how they play in the game? Will the cloud guys change what they do? You know, which set of rules do we think we're going to be playing by, or are we going to be playing by, you know, both going forward?
Yeah. Yep. So I think the large companies won because they just bought all the small companies.
There is that. You know, we did see a huge movement by folks like AWS to try and become enterprise ready. You know, lots of features and functions that are kind of trying to target.
Yep.
You know,
the AWS keynotes, and actually, it was one of the few blog posts I did this year. The AWS keynotes were very different from past keynotes, and they finally, I think, finally got it. They managed to, you know, embrace the enterprise and still stick them in the eye, but not, you know, completely alienate them all at the same time. I mean, I really think they did a good job with that this year. Another one, Azure. Azure is you know, getting a ton of traction in the enterprise for a public cloud kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would arguably call them number two now.
Yeah, and I think they finally figured out that they have the one great advantage that because of Windows Server being on-prem, they can bundle licensing and they can bundle stuff. And if they pay their sales guys to bundle that stuff, people will go, oh, I just have credits. And, you know, that's their greatest advantage is install base. So, yeah, no, I think that was interesting. Cisco sort of talked about InterCloud, which still it's not 100% clear if it's them running it or this some sort of linkage of service providers. I can't for the life of me figure out what HP is doing. I really can't. I don't say that sort of disparagingly. Like, I can't figure them out because every 6 months they seem to change. Oracle made a bunch of announcements, and they had a really good last quarter, but I don't get the sense that, I mean, maybe we hang out with the wrong crowd, that people are buying into the Oracle Cloud thing so much as just sort of going, okay, checking some boxes. But, you know, Larry changed jobs, so maybe they will get back to being a technology company. Who knows? Lots going on in that space. I think we are seeing a blending of people just ultimately chasing the money as opposed to staying religious to one way or the other.
Agreed. So 2015, man, you and I both wrote down a bunch of notes, and I think we just kind of blend them all together and then kind of throw the actual text up on the website.
Yeah. So you want me to go first?
So let's just kind of talk. Yeah, just you kind of talk and we'll kind of interrelate all the predictions, right? But I think the first one's pretty obvious.
Yeah. So my first one of our thoughts was sort of containers. It's hard to get away from it. I mean, it was interesting. I wrote a really long blog about sort of the year in containers, and for the first 6-7 months it was all Docker. You know, it was Docker. We've had Solomon and Ben on the show, and things were cool. They took a lot of money. You know, the ecosystem's growing, and then CoreOS decided to drop an Upper Decker on them, and and then the last 2 months of the year got really interesting because, you know, we went from, you know, Docker's the container company, you know, is Docker going to replace VMware and all those kind of normal crazy discussions you have to, we're no longer dealing with just containers. We're dealing with a lot of, well, number one, we're dealing with multiple container concepts, right? Canonical had LXD, CoreOS now has Rocket, Docker's got Docker. But you quickly realize, like, it's not about the container. It's about this sort of system level thing, because CoreOS has etcd. They have a couple of other tools. Docker now has, you know, their sort of system level tools. Canonical has their tools. You know, you've got people like Mesosphere taking a bunch of money. It is going to be a really, really interesting place. And these little guys have some money. They're not just, you know, open foundations. And
yep. And what's interesting too is towards the end of this year, it was a very subtle shift, but it went from like, you know, Docker being used as a synonym for containers.
Yep.
To see these other players came in, and we kind of, you know, it's almost like the classic trough of disillusionment where, like, it was like everyone was loving Docker, everyone was, you know, Docker equals containers, and then all of a sudden we kind of started to have a little bit of a crash, right? And yeah. And that for me equals market maturity. That shows that there's more than one player in the market. There's more, you know, there's some other people that want to go chase this piece of the pie, right? And that is significant to me, actually, that, you know, it doesn't become other people got in the market before Docker equals containers.
Yeah. Now, I will say, and whoever runs biz dev for Docker, and it might be a marketing thing, it might be a biz dev thing. I mean, they got everywhere. I mean, they were, yep. You know, they're at the core of Google's container service. They're at the core of DigitalOcean, AWS, Tutum Cloud. All the providers are pretty much using Docker, although... You know, obviously maybe they can swap those things out, but they're there. I mean, they even got Microsoft and Windows technology talking about Docker, which is we still would love.
They got up on stage at AWS, and when Amazon won't partner with anybody,
right? And yeah, exactly. They never have technology people up there. Yeah, no. So that part's fascinating. We would still love to have the folks from Windows, you know, from Microsoft on the show and explain to us how you're going to do. You know, Docker and containers within Windows, just from a technologist perspective, because yeah. it's a Linux, you know, sort of technology. It's C groups and all that sort of stuff. So that was, you know, I think that's the sort of low hanging fruit. Everybody sort
yeah.
of saw that.
But I'm going to take it one step further though and say, okay, as part of 2015 and Docker to complete the kind of trough of disillusionment, I think we're going to go through a phase where, you know, somebody big is going to blow up in some way using Docker, and then everyone's going to hate it, or it's certainly, you know, the red's off the candy for a little while, and then everyone's going to love it again.
Yeah. And well, and VMware is obviously trying to make a big push that, you know, containers by themselves aren't any good, and that it's, you know, containers plus VMs, and you know, so they're of anybody going to make the biggest push that containers aren't great technology by themselves, you know, while trying to sort of straddle the fence of like, well, but they're still good, they're yep. just better when they're in a, you know, an ESX fence.
Yep. So the next one I had, actually it interrelates to some of the things you had written down, was. You know, we're in a transition of skill sets in this industry. And a transition of skill sets also means new ways of learning. And for me, what I put down was blogging will kind of become a lost art going into 2015. And I'm going to ask you kind of openly, like, do you learn a lot from blog posts anymore like you used to?
Here's the thing. I'll say yes and no. I think from, you know, I still think there are a small group of people that do good blog posts that are technical, right? And there used to be folks that would just write these sort of long blogs, and you never knew if they were, you know, biased towards their employer or kind of whatever their thing was. The only blogs that I ever read anymore are, and partly because of this new job I'm doing, but like the ones that are, here I played with something, and here's how it worked, and here's how you can go do it yourself,
yep.
and here's the scripts, or here's where the code is, or whatever. Yep. Like those are the only ones that are sort of interesting, and to a certain extent, like those are basically like documentation. They're like documentation with some expertise embedded in them. They're really not blogs anymore. But I kind of feel like, you know, that's the stuff that's still interesting to me. The typical blogs, you know, I don't learn as much from them. Sometimes I'll pick up little bits and pieces. Now, the one blog I do really like is John Troyer's thing, because mm-hmm. he does a good job of kind of cutting through some of the bullshit. But yeah, no, it's you know.
So that's what you can do when you're independent.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, and you know, like I just think the learning curve in our industry has become steeper. And the tools have shifted.
Yeah, I think the tools have. I mean, I'll give you an example. So like the things that we do, you know, in the new group that I do for my regular job for this, the EMC code stuff. I mean, we basically have this, if it's not on GitHub, it doesn't exist kind of mentality. And I think, you know, there, while you don't want to bastardize what GitHub is, I mean, there is a great way of putting content out there that, you know, helps whatever, you know, your project is, you know, and that's what we tend to use. So, you know, and that's where we tend to find information more so than we're finding blogs and stuff. So yeah, I would totally agree with that one.
And kind of throw in another one of my predictions. I just put at the bottom, I just put GitHub or get out. And it means basically you need to go learn GitHub and you need to learn it now.
Yeah.
Because I really do think even if you're an infrastructure person and all you've done is infrastructure forever, you need to learn how to be able to navigate GitHub.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And then, you know, start, you know, go to try GitHub. Matt Brender, who's, you know, a friend of ours, has done some very cool stuff. I mean, there's a ton of how to do GitHub stuff. I would say, you know, learn GitHub and learn Docker as well, because Docker is whether you want to buy into the whole, like, you know, replaces VMware or takes over the world thing, like, you're going to find that what used to be your OVAs and your VM images are now going to be Docker images that you can just go grab and go play with on your laptop and stuff. So, yeah, I would say everybody, if you don't know that stuff already, learn it. It can be either a very simple system or a super complicated system. But the nice thing is there are so many good resources to learn that stuff that are online, that are free, tutorials, awesome little books and stuff. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
And that kind of goes into, you know, my next prediction of this whole concept of bimodal IT, that it's actually kind of funny. I would be interested, like some of the folks that maybe have gone back and listened to them all, like I honestly can't remember all the early shows anymore. but like you and I had talked about this. I'm not claiming any credit for the term bimodal IT or any of this other stuff, but I do remember thinking back going, not necessarily two would exist like everyone's talking about in bimodal IT, but I remember us using the term of like starve the old, build the new.
Yep.
Of we kind of thought it wouldn't necessarily be a coexist thing as much as it would be resources get sucked out of the old and you go build new. There is no migration path. And I think you and I have thought that for years now.
Yeah.
But I'm just, you know, kind of modifying what we said before and kind of embracing this bimodal IT of, I do think there is going to be a coexistence. And that, again, goes into why you need to learn GitHub and why you need to learn Docker. Because if you want to make the leap from one side to the other, or if you are in an organization that has to maintain both sets of resources, you don't want to be confined to all the old crap.
Right. yeah, and we've said that a lot, and part of that comes from, you know, we have a ton of people that kind of go like, hey, what should I do next to my job? Because we tend to have a lot of listeners who kind of aren't afraid of change and, you know, want to do the new stuff. And yeah, now the only tweak I'll throw on this, because you know, it's always good to kind of talk about what's out there, is there are those that are sort of trying to split IT into two. So I think it's either Gartner or it's one of the big industry folks is calling stuff bimodal. Maybe it's Lydia.
I think it's Gartner.
I think it's Lydia. Lydia's been calling stuff bimodal. And, you know, our buddy, what's his name? English guy, super smart English
Simon.
Guy. Yeah, Simon Wardley is saying, no, it's not really bimodal. There's actually a third phase in there. And I think to a certain extent, you know, like we're not big in arguing religions and stuff. I think what they're both saying is kind of the same thing. One is there is no path between the old stuff and the new stuff, which is what you were saying. I think Lydia's thing is like you're going to have these two kind of factions within IT, which may end up happening. And then I think Simon's thing is more like, there's actually a third one in there that while it doesn't spring up initially, is kind of this blending thing between the two of them. And that's fair. Like I remember, you know, my very first job, I had a green screen terminal. I had a PC, but it actually, the only thing I did on that PC was a green screen terminal back to an AS400, right?
Right.
So in essence, that was sort of, you know, bimodal on my
5250
desk
emulation back to something.
Yeah, but I mean, that, you know, that was basically, you know, there was this new stuff, and then there was this super old stuff, and then you had this sort of blending thing in between the two of them. But yeah, I think, you know, for anybody that listens to our show, we're only going to focus on sort of the newer stuff, and I think what we're ultimately saying is we don't believe there is any simple path between the old stuff and the new stuff, right? There may be an ugly, bumpy, over a mountain kind of path, but nothing super simple that you're just going to go, oh, if I learn Puppet, it will all be good. Like, yep. Not going to happen. So, okay. So my second one, or my next one on the list is, I'm sitting here watching, and I always use AWS as an example, and I go, I think this last AWS reInvent, to me, was a huge kind of watershed one, not because of what they announced, but because of how they announced it. And by that, I mean, they went from announcing these sort of individual services like they'd been doing for a long time to this was the first time they really sort of mashed together some services. So it was like, here's the new, I got to think of exactly what it was, but like, here's one of the new data services. The data services is built, it's like the new RDS service.
Yep.
So their new RDS service, it used to be, if you did RDS, yes, they managed the database for you, but you still had to figure out backups. You still had to figure out how to do multi-AZ. You had to figure out how to do these things. The new version, all that gets done for you.
Yes.
And it's what they've done is they've gone, I have a database management service. I have a redundancy service that I have multi-AZ. I have a snapshot service to keep your data. I can replicate your data. I can do, and basically it's like, oh, wow, they mashed together like three or four different services and they've hidden it behind one button.
Yep.
And that learning curve, the ability to do that stuff is, you know, I mean, if you study any sort of learning curve science, when that thing starts, you know, kind of going up and to the right, it starts hockey sticking, that's when you start to really start cranking. And I don't think people value that enough. You know, I keep seeing companies go, well, we're going to come out with stuff that we think sort of looks like AWS, but we sell it in the old model. We deliver it in the old model. And it's like, you're making every single one of your end customers, your IT organizations, start from scratch. And you've got people like AWS or whatever that are, you know, their learning curve is growing exponentially. And I don't think people value how much, you know, that you've got to figure out a business model that can take advantage of a learning curve, right? And I'm not downplaying everybody else, but like, if you don't figure that out and your competition has the steep learning curve, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
You know? And I think we get some of that from communities, right? You look at something like Docker, which has like 20 something employees, but yet they've got 400 contributors and they're growing like crazy. Like, that's a learning curve, right? You got to take advantage of those sort of things.
Yeah. Agreed.
Here's my next one. I don't think anybody values cloud management. We talk, you know what I realized like halfway through the year, like we talked about it a crap load. The market doesn't value it at all. You look at how much the companies that were like OpenStack companies or cloud management companies got bought for, and none of them are more than $100 million.
Yep.
And yet, you know, you've got flash storage companies that are valued at $3 billion and other, like, it's that stuff is so hard to do, but nobody knows how to value it. And maybe it's because of open source, but you know, like it's a weird mindset, I think, where you go, it's a really hard problem, but since you can't wrap your head around the problem, I don't know how to value it.
Yeah. And that definitely goes back to some of the discussions we've had both on and off the podcast of, there's almost a turning point or a junction in the industry coming where do VCs or do other folks that are, you know, purchasing companies, is there a new model for product valuations and company valuations going forward? And is it above and beyond, you know, especially with more open source software, is it above and beyond just, you know, 10x multiplier of sales or, you know, whatever is the common stuff, right? Where how do you start to attach valuations to companies that are more about removing pain and more operations focused than they are about just sales?
Yeah. And you know, those two things that I just talked about in terms of learning curve and cloud management, I mean, maybe the VCs are smarter than us. I hate to say that sometimes because they invest in a lot of dumb things, but you know, you think about something like AWS or Azure or whatever, you're ultimately paying for them to run cloud management for you, but you don't in any way value them doing that. You're just simply going like, I just want the stuff. I want the resources, the VMs, the storage, the network, the whatever. Maybe that's part of it, is nobody can look at, you know, what you get online as valuable because you don't see it. It's not a line item. And so hence, when you're buying that company or trying to sell that company, now, you know, put all the OpenStack people aside, like, I think that'll have a very interesting longer term thing on for companies like Docker and Mesosphere and HashiCloud, you know, HashiCorp, and these other guys that we like a lot. We think they make very cool technology. But, you know, will the market value them super high? I don't know. You know, there's a little bit of a precedent that got set in 2014.
Agreed. Absolutely. So my next one, and actually is related to one of our last year's predictions. I think that the terminology infrastructure as code will replace kind of SD, you know, anything, you know, SDN, SDS, any of these others, right? And the reason why I say that is because, especially, you know, I did AWS and I did a bunch of the infrastructure as code tracks and all that. And infrastructure as code is more about the action of actually, you know, modifying infrastructure and really making things happen. And it just seems much more practical. And like, I can see an end result and I can understand the use case. And I'm like, oh, I get that. And I want that. And that's very valuable. As opposed to a lot of the software defined stuff, it's a much more abstract in the way everyone talks about it. And it's almost like you see it and you kind of go, oh, okay, that's cool. I don't know where or how I would use that. Really.
Right.
It's just being more practical, I guess. And maybe it's an evolution of the exact same concept. Because at the end of the day, they're the exact same freaking thing. It's almost just like a relabeling or adding more value to the exact same end result.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I will throw this bit in though. I think the terminology between the, you know, software defined whatever crowd, which is very infrastructure centric, and when you start calling something like infrastructure as code, because ultimately they're kind of the same thing.
Yep.
That terminology difference, and when you start saying code or coding or develop or whatever to people that are infrastructure folks, I mean, you want to see people break out in hives. I mean, that, yeah, you will get that immediately. So that would be interesting, because you're right, the technology's there, but the trying to explain it to people is super hard.
And I'll be the first one to tell you, you know, I am an up-and-coming convert to this concept of, you know, after going to the AWS conference and doing a lot of the sessions and watching the keynotes and the demos and kind of walking the show floor and talking to the other companies, there is some just amazingly cool stuff going on and at the operations level, to where I'm like, holy crap, if I would have had that, you know, 15 years ago kind of thing. I mean, it is just amazing the level of automation and what you can really do to kind of make infrastructure dance these days. And so like I'm a full in convert. I completely admit it. That's kind of, you know, my area of focus going forward, without a doubt.
Yep.
Just because I think it's cool.
and I like, you know, again, being the blogger who probably will go out of business being a blogger, but no, I wrote that. I said, I think, you know, all the infrastructure stuff will become, you know, figuring out how to do what the DevOps guys do, you know, using sort of software based stuff and being able to figure out how to get into their tools. I totally agree. I think that becomes the new CCIE, if you will, for anybody who does infrastructure. So, so my next one, and I think we're running a little long, so I'll keep some of these short. I'm super curious to see what happens with all this VC money going into these sort of open source projects, right? So we use Docker as a great example. You've got basically an open source project that we saw in 2014 could grow as an ecosystem. We also saw it could get, you know, sort of not forked, but you could see an alternative like Rocket or LXD, you know, pop up without very little friction. And you've got, you know, took $40 million at a $300 or $400 million valuation. And who, you know, what happens with those companies, right? Do they just grow? I mean, you know, I would love the economist in me, the business side in me would go, I would love for all of them just to become, you know, standalone companies. I think that would be good for our industry, rather than everybody hoping that, you know, Red Hat will buy them, or, you know, that somebody will buy them,
yep,
per se, or they go out of business. Those valuations are crazy, especially when every time you ask them, you go, hey, how do you make money? They go, you know, and it sounds like the 2000 bubble again. Like, well, we're not focused on that at this point.
It's I really want to see, you know, it'd be interesting to, okay, if we go back and look at our, you know, all the startups we've had on the show, right? What is the number of, you know, acquisitions versus it, have any really gonna make it as a standalone company long term, as opposed to, oh, they were bought by so and so, or they're gonna be bought by so and so, or, you know, wait until they're almost broke and then Oracle snatches them up, because that tends to be what they do, or, you know, like, yeah, I completely agree. I would love to see some companies just make it. and not be acquired.
Yeah. So that wasn't a knock on Docker. It was just, you know, that dynamic is fascinating to me. You know, how do these guys make money? You know, I'm like you. I'm rooting for them to become a big boy company and grow up and be profitable and become the next whatever, VMware or somebody else.
Yep.
So I think you've gone through yours. I've got one last one. And this is, you know, again, this is kind of partially us where we've shifted the show, but I think we're both kind of fascinated with this. Like you said, you were at AWS Summit. There are a ton of cool companies that build stuff on AWS, but ultimately they kind of build them on public cloud. So, you know, all these SaaS companies, you know, whether it's PagerDuty, Loggly, Cloudability, I don't know, there's tons of them, right? And we've been lucky enough to have a lot of them on our show. Like, what happens with those guys? Because we've seen in the past the management tools guys, how that plays out. You know, one or two of them get really big because they consolidate, and then lots of them you never hear from again, right?
Yep.
And is that what happens with these? Or, you know, are the economics of SaaS allow them to just work independently? And, you know, because... God, the stuff they do is so cool. You know, whether you're dealing with like Datadog or Boundary or New Relic, yep. Or, you know, New Relic went IPO, so that was cool. You know, so they got out there and they made money and they did their thing. You know, do we see lots more New Relics, or do we see lots of, you know, little tiny overlapping, we don't know how they make any money, you know, lots of free trial things? I don't know. That to me will be a very interesting space to kind of watch, because my take is, if I were running IT, especially from the management side of things, like, I would love to be using their tools more so than any of these big on-prem kind of things to deal with, because they integrate better with other things. They're more modern. They do cool analytics in the background. They're, you know, you can throw whatever logs you want at Loggly and they decode them and they parse them out. And I mean, like, there's all kinds of cool stuff those guys do.
Yep.
But it'd be interesting.
Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting too is to kind of flip it on its head and look at it from a different angle. Is this the new model of most startups going forward? And what I mean by that is, like, if I'm going to get, you know, if I'm going to take some VC money and I'm going to go start a company, do I want to do all the R&D and build infrastructure and do all these other things and have all this stuff in house, or Is SaaS just kind of like the next generation of where startups go because they can go so fast and there is a lot less friction there? And it goes to the reason why I say that is because I don't remember the company, unfortunately. But I was talking to one of the companies at AWS, you know, walking the show floor, and it was it might have been Boundary, but it was one of the kind of infrastructure monitoring companies. And it was you know, one thing I've noticed here is a trend. Not many people, it's like AWS. My options are AWS, Azure, maybe Rackspace, maybe DigitalOcean. But it's basically choose your public cloud, and that's the ones we work with.
Yep.
Is there an on-prem offering? Well, no, not really. And I forget who it was, like I said. But I asked them, I'm like, so why is that? That seems to be a trend here. And they were like, well, because honestly, that's really freaking hard these days, and we don't have a lot of resources, and the market is big enough in public cloud. I don't need to go chase that market right now.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I have to imagine, I mean, you know, we've both done enough technology. It's like...
Dealing with other people's crap is hard, man.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is.
It's a support nightmare.
Yeah, and, you know, so it goes back to that learning curve. I can apply a learning curve and build you an awesome service that you can consume, or I can spend 100 times the resources dealing with your crap, basically going into your attic and looking into your boxes and going like, oh, my God, why do you still have this crap, and you really want me to use it, and yeah. So, yeah, no, I think that stuff's fascinating.
And like, for me, that's, you know, that's the interesting stuff to me. Yep. Right, these days, without a doubt. It sounds awful, but you know, there's not a lot of in-house technologies that I really play with or I'm really super interested in anymore. And I don't know if that's a trend or that's just, you know, where I'm currently headed, and I'll have a new shiny in a couple months. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So, you know, I think there are some things that are still on-prem. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of the, you know, like the Docker stuff has an on-prem version of things, and GitHub has a version of, you know, on-prem GitHub and all those things for people that have to. But, you know, do I need to? I don't know. So, well, listen, man, we've been flapping our gums for a very long time, longer than we usually do. So,
yep.
Let's wrap it up a little bit. We covered a lot of things. We'll have to see whether or not our predictions turn out true next year. Thank you to everybody who listens. You know, we wouldn't do this without you guys. You guys are awesome. Keep telling a friend. If you have a little bit that you can spare, we'd love for you to contribute a little bit to the Krispy Kreme thing. You know, it helps us help the local communities, but it just, you know, it should make you feel good. You're helping little kids. And any last thoughts for 2014, man?
No, just really thankful and you know, partly amazed that we've lasted 4 years.
yeah, we're going into year five. Holy cow.
But this is pretty amazing. So just wanted to say again, thank you to everybody.
Yeah. So do you want to take us home?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you like the show, please tell a friend or leave us a review on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at TheCloudCastNet or on the web at TheCloudCast.net, where you can find links to everything CloudCast. Happy New Year, everybody, and thanks for listening.